Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the Political Center, and I have my co-host in the studio from the Political Right, Senator Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody.
And we are so pleased to have on the political left a person who's familiar to our listeners, former Salt Lake County Mayor and Utah Democratic Party Chairman Peter Caroon.
Great to be here.
Former on both those.
Former, the best kind.
You know, we get grief. Peter, what do you think? We get grief on this show for Natalie representing the center.
I agree she's not the center. She's definitely on the right. So.
Oh, I was going to say she's too far to the left.
I thought, you guys are making my day. My gripe is not that I'm right or left or whatever. It's that some people think because you're not an elected official, you don't represent anybody.
Oh.
And they're like, you still have a voice.
You represent the citizens.
No. In fact, do you know how many people say, well, I'm only a resident. I'm not a senator. That always bugs me when people say that, because it's like, yes, up there, I have one vote of 104 legislators, right? Mm-hmm. But in our community, we all have the same voice.
Yeah.
You know, we all need to be chiming.
Well, and I also don't like to be thought of as a moderator, because I think the middle deserves
just a moderate
a position.
Yeah.
You know, we don't even get a name.
No.
It's both sides of the aisle. The aisle doesn't mean anything.
We both call you
That's
the same thing, unelectable.
Well, great to let's have a terrible.
She could be our next governor.
Let's have a good discussion, and let's talk about Joe Biden, just because this is so interesting to see his mini surge in the polls. I guess he's drawing like 36% among the, I think it's like, is it like 20 people now running for office?
I lost count, so I don't even know anymore.
It's a lot, but our producer pointed out to me that we have two septuagenarians who are candidates, the only candidates in double figures. So, Dan, that was a big word, septuagenarians.
Yeah, I was just Googling it.
In their 70s.
Two septuagenarians.
Yeah. What do you make of this, that these two old white guys are leading in the polls in this diverse nation?
Well, I thought the days of the old white guy were over, so that's why I'm not running for anything. But sounds like
there's new life. Peter.
There's new life.
So you in
time to get back in. Don't tell my wife. but it sounds like he's a well-known quantity, and people like him, and he's a likable person. So, and he's got name ID, and was our vice president, of course. So I think he automatically shot to the top. But you know, who knows if that will last?
He's arguably the most moderate candidate in the race right now, I think. Dan, do you see it that way?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Trump.
I would agree,
And then on the Democratic side, so many of them seem so far left to me.
He doesn't have that race to one side or another, right? And so he's just kind of hanging out there in the middle. And it'd be interesting to see if actually the Dems can nominate someone like that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I can't help but ask, Peter, since you're in the studio today, how many of these candidates have you met on the Democratic side?
I've met Joe Biden. I've met Bernie Sanders. Met Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who's probably one of my favorites in the race.
He came apparently to Salt Lake City.
He came actually when he ran for the Democratic National Chair several years ago. Utah supported him, so he was our first candidate that we supported. And then there's many rounds, and ultimately he didn't win, but he was our favorite at the time.
I mean, I can say this because I'm white. Buttigieg is the ultimate white guy. I mean, he looks the straight down.
Yeah.
He could easily be out mowing his lawn on a Saturday in suburbia anywhere in the country. You know what I mean? That's why it's so. But he has such an interesting background. Yeah. And when you listen to him speak,
it's appealing.
I'm a right guy.
It's appealing.
He's smart and he's good on his issue. Anyways.
Now
I like him.
When he announced his husband, I think it's Chasen.
Yeah, Chasen. Who's a great Twitter follow, by the way.
Yeah, and they have a couple of dogs that have a good Instagram account,
I
if I'm not mistaken. But they gave the big kiss. So Buttigieg and Chasen, his husband, after he announced, they did the big kiss. That got a lot of play in social media.
Did it?
I'm sure it did. I didn't follow it. I'm not much of a social media person, but God bless those who love each other, and we should have more love in the world.
Need more love in the world.
And those who listened to our show last week know that I grounded myself from social media.
How'd
and,
they go?
Obviously I missed a few news stories because I missed the kiss. But I will tell you, it's been a fantastic week. It feels like the sun has been shining brighter even though it's been raining.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, good.
Go without social media.
Peter, we hear that a lot more of the Democratic candidates are going to be coming through Salt Lake because of us being a Super Tuesday state now and the like. Is that what you read, being a former chairman and whatnot?
Yeah.
I think it's a great Elizabeth thing. Warren. I'm sure others are coming this way.
And when I was chair, when it was Trump and Hillary, we were, for about 60 seconds, a competitive state as well.
Yeah.
That didn't last long, but it was nice. It was great to have that attention. Yeah. So, and I think it engages Democrats in the political system, where traditionally they sort of get despondent because Utah is considered a flyover state. So it's great to have some excitement and have Utah's Democrats.
We'll keep counting them down here.
I say, when were those 60 seconds, Peter? I'm still trying to figure out, like, anyway.
Well, I knew it was a competitive state when a lot of people started coming here, so it didn't last long.
Okay, so more national news. We had this very unusual moment this week when the opposing parties, Republicans, Democrats, met on infrastructure. And I caught some of the news from this, but Chuck Schumer called the meeting very constructive. You know, like you don't hear that very often.
You want to know why?
Well, because they're spending money.
Well, one, they're spending
money. Both sides
money,
like to spend money.
And there's no discussion on how to pay for it.
Yeah, it's like saying, I want to be the education governor, but don't ask me how we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, our nation is not going to succeed by not having infrastructure, whether it's education or roads. Mm-hmm. We need to have good infrastructure. And so I think that's why both sides will come together. And ultimately, you know, we have to figure out how to pay for it. Maybe we can get those rich people's tax cut back and help pay for some infrastructure.
For me, the two just policy points, when you travel internationally and see infrastructure in some other countries, you're reminded of how we've fallen behind here.
Yeah, especially trains.
Airports, trains, and the like.
Yeah, we have no trains in this great country.
The other point I'd make is I think it's time for a federal gas tax increase to help with this.
20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just as long as it's devoted to infrastructure.
Well, good times. You got 25. The talk, and you know, coming out of the room was that there was conversations about a 25% gas tax increase, right? For all of those things, 25% is a steep jump in the gas tax. Utah was nervous about doing 5 cents, right? Mm-hmm. So to see a 25% increase for federal transportation, I would argue at the end of the day, maybe we just need to start putting some of this federal money, just direct grant it to the state and let the state start handling some of these larger federal projects.
Yeah. Well, the bigger issue is the gas tax is becoming less and less effective because more and more people are driving electric cars. So we probably need to look at some kind of how far you drive standard and do it based on mileage instead of how much gas you buy.
It's going to be an interesting policy area. I want to talk for a second about the 2020 census. We had a listener, write in, call in with questions about it, and particularly on the citizenship question. So just to set this up for my colleagues on the right and left, 2020 census, largest peacetime mobilization of the federal government, just to give you a sense, has three really important functions. The most important, I would say, would be apportionment, representation, in Congress. Second would be but distribution of federal monies and grants and the things. So it means money to states. And then third, incredibly important to a well-functioning economy in terms of planning, whether it's nonprofits, business, government. But interestingly, in 2020, President Trump and his Department of Commerce secretary made the decision to put a citizenship question on the 2020 census form. That has not been the case for many decades. On the decennial. They ask it in surveys, but not on the decennial. And people are really worried that it will affect participation.
Yeah, I agree. Frankly, I think it would be great information to have to know who's a citizen living in our communities and who's not. But the risk of misuse is so great, especially with somebody like Donald Trump in office, that that is something that we shouldn't put on the census.
Dan, it feels to me like this is a Republican administration doing something that will quell a representation for Democrats.
Good. You know, that's interesting.
Because of, the immigrant population being maybe more supportive of the left. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I will say, if you have a store and your obligation is making sure you understand your inventory, knowing how to meet its needs, making sure you understand your customers, everybody wants data down to the zeros, right? And you can go online And for voter information, I mean, I'm sorry, this is terrible information for you. Mm-hmm. I can actually, as an elected official or as a candidate for that matter, I can go out and buy a data set that I could then plug into Google Earth. And on every household, there's a pin. I can click on that pin and it will tell me who the registered voters are, how much money they make, what their job is, whether they likely lean Republican or they lean Democrat, which way they go. They will tell you when the last, I mean, you go down.
It makes the term micro-targeting come to life.
Yeah. So
you can,
we can do all of that on the consumer element, right? And so everybody is afraid of asking one simple question about whether or not you actually are a legal person in the country. To me, that is just head-scratching. I think you need that information so that we can understand the scope of our policies as they blend into some of our programming and as we blend into the needs of the country.
Yeah.
Again, great information to have, but too risky with somebody like Donald Trump in office.
Yeah.
Well,
and
could you make the same argument about just about anything that the census asks, though? Like what your income is or how many children you have or whatever it might be. You know, you could start to look through some of those negative policies of either party, right? And you could see the government having that information could be negative, and yet it isn't.
Yeah.
There are checks in place to avoid
that. From the political middle, I would just say that what your most important obligation in a census is to get an accurate count. And things that affect that count are really problematic, you know, if they hurt it. We got to go to break. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Governor Herbert's falling popularity. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Peter Coroon on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. And we're going to talk for a minute about Governor Herbert and his popularity. I don't remember the source for this data, Dan. Is it Morning Consulting? Or
Morning Consult.
Morning Consult. But they're doing these, they're doing, you know, 5,000 interviews, what, in all 50 states. And they're ranking elected officials based on their constituencies.
View of
sentiments.
Their executive. They do it for the senator. They actually do it for Congress people as well. I think that's as far as they break the data down, which it's kind of
interesting
from a data point.
Well, and
right?
We're a political news program,
but
2018, Governor Herbert had a number one ranking in popularity among the 50 governors.
Yeah.
And in the most recent numbers, he's fallen to 19.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big change.
It is, you know, it just highlights, you know, fish. So what is the old saying? Fish, guests, and governors all go bad after, you know, a certain period of time.
Sounds
right?
Like something a legislator would say.
So, but, you know, you look at some of those things and you're like, well, you know, I can see why there gets to be a certain point where everybody's kind of, you know, saying, hey, we're ready for some change. And I think the governor senses that in positions he takes or whatever. Is he saying, he's not putting his hand too heavily on the scale on things and vetoed fewer bills than he usually does.
Dan, it doesn't have to be that way, though.
And that's usually a sign that they may be running again where they don't want to upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I would argue that you can be in a position to finish strong and, you know, cement your legacy and go on your victory tour.
Yeah, last year, do what you want. Don't, you know,
I don't know.
Let them do it, whatever you want.
So I'll give you, let's develop this just a little bit more. I worked for a three-term governor. There's only been two in our state's history, Rampton and Leavitt. We use this saying in the governor's office that the longer you're governor, the more rocks that are in your backpack. There's just more people that you've offended or done whatever to. And so here we have a governor that's waning in popularity. Is it fatigue, Peter? You ran against the guy.
Well, I did, and I wonder why people voted for him in the first place. But that's, you know, we're beyond that. I'm beyond that now.
Come on.
But
he has the longest economic expansion almost on record in our state.
Thanks to Obama.
To Trump.
I wonder where you're going with this. Anyway, I like to say that when they vote for you the first time, they're excited. Second time, okay. He or she's done a pretty good job, and we'll vote for him again. Third time, who is this person, and why do we vote for
happened
him
to
in
Ralph
the first
Becker,
place?
Yeah, right? Ralph Becker did an incredible job as mayor of this city, and that third term became too difficult to reach.
Yeah, I got out for a third term, and that was a smart idea.
I'm going to pose a really provocative question here, but we all know that Spencer Cox is entertaining a run for governor. Dan, I'll go to you first on this, but I've become persuaded that I don't see how he can stay in the LG seat and successfully run for governor.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Have I told you this before?
No, I've
never
heard
this theory. This is just my independent. Yeah. Well, you know, he has to be his own guy.
Yeah.
And he certainly has his own vision and, you know, thoughts for the state.
Oh, interesting.
And
yeah.
as long as he's in the LG slot, out of loyalty, out of respect for the governor, he's got to be the second in command. And I'm just starting to think that out of respect to the office and the governor, he ought to run, if he's going to do it, leave the office and run full time.
Well,
give me your political insight.
He has nothing
and I'll
to
disagree.
Lose.
Okay,
he has nothing
listen.
To lose in that scenario, right? I mean, the hard part is when you are the second command is you're, there are risks that something could happen in the office of the governor's office, which isn't very likely with Herbert. Herbert runs a pretty straight, you know, front office.
Yeah.
I will say, though, there's a risk, right, in that element. And plus, there's also this difficulty for the governor where he's got his second in command out on the campaign trail.
And he's
got to
start saying things and painting
stuff.
A picture. And I just started to see how it's untenable that he can stay in that role. Peter, it sounds like you disagree, but I would just say he has a podium as a candidate. He doesn't need the LG, you know, platform.
Well, although essentially he gets paid to run for office, where when you're the lieutenant governor, you're basically your job is to go around the state and glad hand and cut ribbons and do everything that the governor doesn't want to do. So he's getting his name out there and more exposure, and that's all what you need to get elected. So
That's what I was going to say. My instinct is, I totally understand your perspective. My instinct, though, as I think about it, is as a lieutenant governor, you have a title and you can go places and people will give you a seat because you have a title. If you don't have a title, you're back trying to pay to play like all the other candidates.
And I'm saying that as a candidate, you will get invited to plenty of things to share your vision, and you are so encumbered when you are underneath someone.
Interesting.
So, okay, really interesting to, you know,
I never thought about that.
Just kind of thumb through.
Stay in office, Spencer.
I'm going to throw out we're going from a really big time issue to something a little bit smaller, but Sprague Library has announced that they're going to have, do you know where that is, Dan? That's in Sugar Hill. Do you really? Good. An all gender, multi-purpose washroom.
Bathroom. Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
It has a shared common area, you know, with sinks and everything, but you have floor to ceiling.
Europeans have been doing this for like 20 years or something like that.
Yeah. Go down to Public on 9th South and
same
West
way.
Temple, they've got the same thing. You get your own privacy. It's sort of nice.
So can I?
No
can
disagreement
I share?
From the right.
Yeah,
left
no
left. I don't have any issue with it
can
either.
Can I tell you my frustration?
Okay.
We are building a brand new Salt Lake Airport, and guess what? We're not doing bathrooms like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked the city, why? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we know this is an issue. Mm-hmm. We know people care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we continuing to make
why not
this
be the first airport that's 100%
the fact that a Republican has to walk into that airport and point that out as a potential problem? That was shocking to me.
Yeah, I like that, Dan. Okay, other kind of, I'm going to call it micro news, driver's license renewal. It's changing. I think you get to go once every 8 years. Now you renew it, and only in person once every 16 years.
I know.
It's great. They need to do the same things for cars, too, now.
And yet,
Dan, was this your bill or anything?
Because
you get involved in these weird things like this.
I was going to say, I did not get involved in this, but I did know this was coming. The other, you know, I'll just say, I'm going to save it for my gripe. I have a gripe,
okay,
but I'll share it.
Don't forget it. Okay, and then I also want to bring up Kennecott, Utah Copper, Rio Tinto closing down their last coal-fired power plant in Magna. I guess it will be a major reduction in their emissions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's celebrate that. What do you see in that?
And you also don't hear them talking about a reduction in force either, right? So you see coal fire, they're switching out of coal fire and they're doing it, you know, differently. And, you know, they're still going to backstop the grid based on coal fire. I mean, I don't think there's any way that you can totally divorce yourself.
And the head of Rocky Mountain Power, when I was in office 10 years ago, said we're not going to build another gas-powered plant in this state. And I think he was right on then. And it's glad to see Kennecott, Rio Tinto coming along.
Yeah, okay.
Did you see Kennecott also just, you know, while we're talking?
Yeah,
Kennecott,
why not? Can't come back to it.
You know, they reopened the visitor center. So if you
after
have
the
never
slide.
Been
Is this
to
in
the
your
mine,
district?
It's just outside my district, just there. But I ride my bike by it all the time. But now if you've never been out to the mine and peeked into the mine, it's a pretty deep pit.
Yeah.
They've got a whole new visitor center because the visitor center disappeared with the slide a few years ago. And so now it's back and it's really cool.
Neat. Take your kids.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I can't help but while we have Peter on the program, and I realize it's a different party, Peter, but I want to hear you talk about the candidate conventions that are coming up. And I want to ask you about the Republican side specifically, and then we'll get Dan's comment. But what are you seeing in these people vying for chair?
Well, I can't imagine why anybody would run for party chair, having been one on either side of the aisle.
It's a painful job, huh?
A painful job, and it seems like everybody just sits around and bickers at each other and doesn't do the job of getting people elected. So, power to those who are willing to do it. Having looked at the list, you see some somewhat normal people and some somewhat crazy people, which is typical of
the Republican Party, a lot of these people, and Democratic Party too. In the Utah Republican Party, you have Derrick Brown. He used to work with Senator Lee, a former lawmaker. Phil Wright, who's a prominent conservative crusader, is a way to think of him. Mm-hmm. Chadwick Fairbanks. This is founder of the Veterans Caucus.
Yeah,
and got the best name.
Yeah, got a good name. And then we have a new one, a first woman elected to full term to lead the dominant political party in the Beehive State, Sylvia Amira Fisk, if she's elected.
That'd be nice to see a woman running the Republican Party.
Yeah, your thoughts on these?
Well, Derek's going to win.
Really?
Yeah, Derek's going to win.
Wow. Yeah. For someone in the political middle, that's big news, right? Because Derek is a moderate.
Yeah, he's... he's productive, right? And that's
and I think a moderate is productive.
You
typically,
you can't get away from that moderate thing. I'll just say that Derek was a good lawmaker. He was a good staff member for Senator Lee, a conservative. And you start to look through his abilities as well. Derek is just very gifted individual. And the fact that I honestly, you know, Derek makes money doing other things, and very few of them have anything to do with politics. So when he looks back and says he wants to give back a little bit and do the party chairmanship, to Peter's point, my first question to Derek was, really? I mean, have you lost your mind? But he wants to do it, and I think he should.
For those who don't know Derek, he's an amazingly talented person.
Yeah.
Like, he will take a challenge.
Yeah, no, he seems like the normal one in the race. But as usual, the crazies will take over and make his life miserable for 2 years, and he'll finally realize that and move on.
Peter, what'd you make of the Inland Port protests that precluded a meeting from even happening?
This whole thing reminds me of Legacy Parkway. There's a way to do it the right way, and there's a way to do it the wrong way. And of course, in Utah, we always want to try doing it the wrong way first. Having economic development, I think, is a good thing. And I think the port could be a good thing if they, you know, don't raid all the taxes for the state. And if they, you know, listen to the environmental concerns and listen to the people who live in that district, I think they can come up with something good.
Yeah. Dan, I'm going to take issue with what he said, but do you want to comment?
I don't know where to start. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, I just say on the Legacy Parkway, I mean, I live that. And, you know, you had a state that had the approvals from a Democratic administration, from EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, from USDOT. I mean, we got all those approvals from a Democratic administration, and a Salt Lake City mayor caused a lot of trouble, and it wasn't even in his city.
But we ended up with a nice parkway and something better than we otherwise would have
had.
But
it cost. At what cost? I think if they would have came and said, we don't want billboards and we want to control speeds, but you get the same alignment, we would have done it in a heartbeat. They didn't get much for that delay.
As usual, the Democrats in Salt Lake City get the flip off from the legislature, and then it ends up in the courts and, you know, costs a gazillion dollars more.
Okay. We got to go to gripes. Dan, do you want to lead us in gripes?
Okay. My gripe is apparently the passport, you know, the U.S. passport service is not as fast as it could be. But case in point, they had a question about something on my passport. Actually, they needed a new set of photos. My photos were 8 months old. Somehow they could tell.
Wow.
So I had to send them new photos. But I had to send it to Virginia. And then from Virginia, had to be forwarded to Seattle.
Yeah, I'm
so
sure that
Utah
Seattle got
to Virginia
in this
to Seattle makes no sense in my mind. But it does to the Passport Services Agency of the United States government. So my hat's off, federal government, for efficiency.
Yeah, that's terrible. I once had to get a passport in like 3 days, and I had a courier take it for me and back from San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Not fun. My husband doesn't know how much that costs. Peter?
Well, my wife says I complain too much, and my father-in-law says I'd complain if they hung me with a new rope. So I'm not going to have a gripe today. I'm going to be positive and just grateful that I live in such a wonderful state and where Democrats and Republicans can get along. How's that?
That's great, Peter. I'm going to stay in the positive tone and give props to the gay.
Cribes, people.
I know, but I'm going to give props to the gay BYU student that came out, boldly in his commencement address.
You can gripe about some of the reactions that people had calling it inappropriate.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I thought it, the fact that the speech was turned in and looked at and untouched says something is different.
Times are a-changing.
Yeah. I spoke to a group from the Richmond, Virginia Chamber that's in town in Salt Lake this week. And when I mentioned our statute on non-discrimination for, housing and employment, they applauded. Mm. And something is happening.
Yeah. Well, I just tell my kids, tend to your own garden, live your life, and let other people live theirs, and all will be good.
Yeah. So something good to celebrate. Well, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Senator Dan McKay and former Salt Lake County Mayor Peter Caroon. The program's produced by Anthony Skoma. Thanks for listening.